Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. This next segment of our show, we're going to hear from our friend Nicole Daigneau. She'll be talking a little bit about her plans for the yoga classes for 2020. So what do you have in mind for expanding or modifying or just extending the classes for 2020?
Well, it's interesting you're asking me this today on the morning when I'm going to pick up my fresh-off-the-press brochures that I've just created for my modified and assisted yoga classes. As you know, these classes have been just really organically at their own steady pace, evolving since about 2012 when I began teaching the special needs classes. And it's now at the point where, you know, just more and more people are finding out about it. And even more so, more and more people are expressing the great benefits that they're seeing from it, or that they're seeing their child or their client gaining from it. So just as the word spreads, I'm trying to, you know, just produce a little bit more literature for people to see. I've updated my website for people to learn more about it and hopefully see a few more bodies at all the classes that I teach during the week.
So if you could extend into one area of modification, if there was one ability type you really wanted to work with, what would it be?
Well, so you're asking if there was one ability I'd really like to work with?
Yes, if there were one type of disability that you've never dealt with before.
Well, I'm currently seeing one student. I have a few students with extremely limited mobility. And I think for those students, I think, first of all, for them to even come to a yoga class, there's so many barriers there just in terms of, you know, maybe their caregivers thought that, you know, how could they possibly do yoga? And as they start coming and they see the very subtle but very effective gentle movements we do for all the joints and some of the incredible regaining of, you know, flexibility and mobility and strength, spinal strength that we're really seeing, you know, now that I've been seeing certain clients for over a year now, I'd like to really, you know, just really express to people and get out to there that even people with very extremely limited mobility, they gain so much from these movements. You know, I've shared with your audience before about the lymphatic system and, you know, when it's stagnant, we just can't detoxify. So, you know, the body hangs on to toxins and it tends to get more sick and it tends to be more stiff and rigid and we start losing our muscles' ability to move at all, and even just the most subtle movements through the assisted yoga practice, I believe they're really helping people to not only get over things like chest colds and respiratory infections, just because their body is detoxifying better, but I'm getting responses such as uplifted moods. People are in much better moods. There's less, you know, just stress and negative responses. So people are feeling better, and caregivers are noticing it. And that really excites me, that people who would probably never think that they would benefit from yoga or could never go to a yoga class, that they are coming and that these results are extremely beneficial. So I'd really like to continue to work with people who have such very limited ranges of motion. That would be really awesome. But, you know, I love all my students. There's so many different types of disability in my students that I work with. So it's very exciting for me to, for example, you know, tone and strengthen the joints of, you know, a group of my students have Down syndrome. So they don't really need to work on the flexibility. Their joints are very hypermobile. So with them, it's kind of exciting to work on more of the strengthening and the toning and see their hips and knees be a little bit stronger, less likely to pop out of joint. That's something that the parents have expressed to me. You know, her knee hasn't popped out of joint for years, for example. And then the other range where there's just the hypertonic, the hypertoned muscles and joints, where there's no movement at all, and where they need the flexibility and the relaxation. So it's just it's exciting for me as a teacher to work with such an extremely wide range group of people with such different needs. And, you know, of course, I'm very excited about some of my students with autism who are, you know, making vocal expressions who never have before. We do a lot of chanting and strengthening of the tongue and the throat and the vocal cords and different games where we're repeating different sounds, and to see their faces light up and to know their mothers expressed to me how excited they are to come to yoga. That's very exciting too. So it's hard to say which one group I'd like to work with most, but those are definitely some of the results that we're seeing.
So when it comes to things like hypertoning and getting these muscles to respond for the first time, how do you overcome the setbacks that some people might feel if they come to a place where it doesn't work and they feel they want to give up? How do you encourage them to keep on going?
I've not seen a student feel like they're giving up. All I see is whether they can express it to me vocally, or it's in their eyes, or it's in the glint in their smile. All I see is excitement that, you know, because I'm really there with them. I'm really looking at them in the eyes. We're really talking to each other, you know, through our connection and touch. I've honestly never seen someone frustrated or give up. You know, that there may be challenges. What I've shared with you a few times over the years is that hump of getting past maybe the caregivers, maybe resistance a little bit. Oh, he can't do that. She won't be able to do that. And to see their faces light up when, you know, after a few sessions, the response is right there. The memory of what we did the previous week is there. Just gaining that awareness of what we're trying to do, and really the excitement. I think that all my students really enjoy such one-on-one time. The caregivers, you know, as I train them as well, they are really starting to listen to and look at and communicate with their clients, I think, in new ways often as well.
So what message would you send going forward about what the need is to keep yoga going among this population?
I'd like to express that everybody can do yoga. I'd like to say everybody should do yoga. I know it might appear to be something maybe intimidating and unattainable, but you know, the whole system of yoga is much more than those fancy asanas, the postures you might see in pictures. It's what you're doing with your body behind the poses. It's what they're doing for the organs, for the endocrine system, for the lymphatic system. And you don't need to be, you know, twisting yourself into fancy pretzels and doing, you know, very difficult inversions in order to gain the benefits of yoga. And the physical stuff is just such a small part of it as well. It's about the focus, the concentration, the relaxation, the calming of the mind, the connection, the steadiness, and everybody could benefit from that, no matter what their ability. So everybody can do it. In my opinion, everyone should do it. I believe that yoga is extremely curative, preventative in terms of, you know, sicknesses, disease, pain, injuries. It just helps everything. I'm a little bit biased because it has done so much for me in my own personal practice for 25 years. I've seen it, you know, it's blown my mind what it's done for me and just here in my own little family, my children, the way it helps us. And, you know, I've taught hundreds of students now over these 20 years of teaching. And it's truly is miraculous how much it benefits and prevents and cures. And I'd love you, my friend Cam, to give it a try.
I'll get there.
I know you will.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this. If you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
My pleasure, Cam. And just to throw out that website for people too, www.cocoyoga.ca. And thank you so much, and Happy New Year.
And to you. Thanks. Next segment of our show, we'll hear from Guy Exley from the Track 3 Ski School. So tell me a little bit about para-skiing at Track 3.
Well, Track 3, as an organization, we work with kids of various disabilities, so cognitive and physical disabilities. And as the years, I've been involved for 21 years, and we've, in the last probably 15 years, we've been seeing a lot more cognitive disabilities than physical, but we still have a number of students who do ski and assist ski. And our motto is that we want to provide those students with an opportunity to enjoy the thrills and excitement of downhill skiing. So we have a variety of special adaptive equipment. Pretty much any child with a disability we can accommodate in one way or the other. And we've gone to the extent of custom making equipment just for one specific child to accommodate their challenges. And then we have a number of equipment that, so we provide the equipment for every single student, regardless of whether they're stand-up skiers or an assist ski or some other special adaptive equipment.
So how do you go about reaching out to the community about the work you do?
Well, we have a fairly active social media campaign mostly. We have a website. We do promote our message, but we find that the network of groups like us within the community that work with the special needs kids is fairly small. So the parents who have kids with special needs tend to find out about us just through their own networks of going to different support groups and things. And we every year we have a waiting list of kids, so we do kind of sell out our program every year. Unfortunately, we can't accommodate everybody just based on numbers. But we haven't had to actually actively market ourselves to get kids to participate because there's just such a need in the community.
So, in your time with Track 3, has there been any individual success story that stands out for you?
Yeah, we've had a couple of really good success stories. I mean, both in the SISKI category. So, we had a student, actually, I think he was a young adult who joined us and started skiing. He had a car accident. And he actually, his name is Jeff Penner, and he ended up on the Canadian Paralympic team and skied in the Olympics, Paralympics, and skied on the World Cup circuit for a couple of years and had some really good success. And then we have another student, his name is Harley Kaufman, and he's currently an instructor with us, and he's an assist ski, he's born with spina bifida. And he started out as a student, as a young boy, and worked his way up from working, you know, skiing on a sit ski with two skis and having, you know, the instructor support him, and then worked up to his own ski. Now he can ski 100% independently now. And he was on the Ontario para racing team for a couple of years and is now coming back and mentoring other young kids who are in sit skis. So we've had a couple of really good success stories, but to be honest, the most of our students will never get to that level just because of their challenges and the type of support they need to ski. So our motto really is, you know, it's safety, fun, and learning. So it's all about being safe, of course, on the hill with the students, and then having fun with the students to give them that, you know, a couple of hours of the week that they can just have fun on the hill like any other kid who's skiing, and then it's learning. So if we do have students who have based on their abilities, their challenges, can accommodate a higher level of independent skiing, then we certainly move towards that. But those tend to be fewer than the norm is more students who ski with us for a number of years. Once they get to be 18, they move into a different program and continue on.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, yep.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Have you ever thought about volunteering with CJAM FM? Why haven't you? Volunteering isn't limited to students. Anyone from the community can come into the station and start their very own program. All you need are a pair of headphones and the enthusiasm to learn. So get involved right here in your community with a topical spoken word show or music program where you choose the content. Email programcjam@gmail.com or come on down to the station. We're located on the University of Windsor campus in the basement of the CAW Student Center. Find out more information about how you can volunteer at cjam.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Nicole Daigneault, who told us a little bit about her plans for the yoga program for 2020, and from Guy Exley, Track 3 Ski School. This next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Sylvia Guido, who'll be telling us a little bit about Access TO. So tell me a little bit about Access.
Access TO?
Yes.
So it's an organization that started in 2013, and then that we became a not-for-profit about 2 years ago. And so what we do in Toronto, it's all volunteer-based, and we train individuals to perform accessibility audits, and then we perform these audits once a week, and then they get posted on accessto.ca, and it's just sort of been running like that for the past 6 years.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of what you look for in these audits?
Yeah, so what happened was we sort of at the beginning, it was very important to make a sound criteria list because we wanted to make sure everything was like consistent because of how many volunteers, different ones even, that we had every year. So it's actually a compilation of standards from the City of London and then the City of Toronto as well. And it looks at the exterior, so things like, obviously, you know, are there stairs outside, the width of the door to get in. Then there's also things like, you know, how wide is the sidewalk? How easy is it to get up onto the curb? Is there parking? Can you get there by transit? Is the transit accessible? And then we go in the interior, everything from the bathroom to the table heights, to the service counter heights. Do they allow service dogs? And then we also discuss things like customer service, just in general. So those are kind of like the three big ones. But then we've also, in the past few years, we kind of branched out into art galleries because before it was mostly restaurants, cafes, bars, concert venues. But now with art galleries, the Smithsonian has a great resource that we sort of pulled, and that then involves things a little different, like how the height of the artwork, do they have any work in the galleries that you can touch, and any like sensory kind of things to be aware of, because in a lot of galleries they keep them quite dark, so we just sort of ask them questions about, you know, is the lighting always like this? Or if there's videos, do you have like closed captioning, things like that?
So do you ever find there are any challenges in working with these organizations to improve accessibility?
So the thing is, we really just highlight the ones that are. So if we go into a space, we do call beforehand always, and if they feel that they're accessible, we go in, and in actuality, they aren't. They just might have, I think accessibility, even now, people are a little bit confused of what that means. So if we find that they don't meet our criteria, we just offer them suggestions. And there are always, actually, maybe I've had one, me personally, I don't really do the audits anymore, but maybe I had one that they just weren't interested in anything we had to say. But a lot of them are sort of like, okay, can you tell us sort of how we can be more accessible? And so we've put up a business owner tips on our website, which is just kind of basic things. But then a lot of times they'll email us after with some other questions, and then at least we can forward them some resources. So I think a lot of them are actually very like open to it, and they want to be more accessible.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with AccessTO, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
So we've received 2 grants, which were very appreciated. And sort of the first one actually was from the Ontario Arts Council, which actually wanted us to look at the accessibility of art spaces in the whole province. So we kept it more in the GTA, but up until then we had only been doing things in the Toronto area. And that was a surprise to us, because they just wanted us to kind of get a handle of like how good or how bad it is. So we were able, that was the first time we actually got funds to go out and look at these things. And so we were able to, I don't know, I think we have a decent database. We were always trying to add to it, but I think that's been a great success for us, because we weren't quite sure if we'd be eligible for something like that and if it had been done. And honestly, it hasn't, and it still really hasn't. But that was great. And we're actually just finishing a grant right now, just end of year. And that's just to the City of Toronto actually liked what we were doing. And so they offered, or they're able to give us some more money to just create a better volunteer training protocol with a module to make it easier now to recruit new volunteers. So that's been great. And so that we hope to see something from that like in the next few months.
So if you could send any message to the community about why accessibility should be a priority matter, mm-hmm. what would you say?
I think when it comes down to it, accessibility will always, always benefit everybody. It's not just, and actually I'm a physiotherapist. I'm an able-bodied physiotherapist that I technically don't need to call beforehand. I don't need to, you know, think about like transportation routes, you know, when I'm going to restaurants or anything in the city. But I know that, you know, one day I will have a stroller, or I will have, you know, I might break an ankle, or I might need some type of kind of modification to a space. And I would like to also just grow old into my city. And if I have a mobility device, I'd like to not have to stop going to my favorite brunch spot. And so that's what I really, really try and even encourage even some of my colleagues to take part in what we're doing, because they might not right now think it's important, but it would benefit everybody. And for businesses in particular, because I know that it comes down a lot of times to money, especially in Toronto where a restaurant might not stay open longer than a year, I try and encourage them and tell them and try and provide them with facts that actually, if you put the money in now to be more accessible, you actually will have more people come into your space. And we'd be happy to put you on our website and encourage people to come to your space. So it might actually help you with your business long term, as opposed to maybe hindering it somehow.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
So let's be honest when it comes to track three and what Guy was saying. For anyone entering into anything they want to do, it can be unlikely they'll ever reach the professional level. Should we therefore turn away from these opportunities and not try, thinking there's a glass ceiling that may or may not exist? Or do we take it for what it is, a chance to be free and to enjoy? For someone who's having their very first recreational experience following an injury, for example, does it really matter that they might or might not ever play in the Paralympics? Or do they just live in the moment, going downhill, feeling the exhilaration? Why is it we build these roadblocks and say, there's no point in trying if I can only go so far? You don't know how far you can go. Test yourself. Take the next step. Sure, it can be a long, arduous climb. That's anything in disability life. That's anything in life in general. Nothing worth doing, my friends, is ever something you can just slap together and say, hey, it's good. Time and effort strengthen the whole being. It's not about just one accomplishment. Even if you do make it to the professional level, even if you find yourself king of the heap, you gotta ask yourself, what am I gonna do the next day? How am I gonna make this better? How am I gonna make myself stronger in my abilities? So it's not about how the world cheers you on. It's about what you feel and what you take away from any given experience. You can choose to live for that experience and the enjoyment, or you can look at it as something big and intractable and beyond you. But that takes all the fun out of it. The best thing for anyone with a disability or anyone facing just something that scares them or something that seems difficult is to find that one little seed of enjoyment, that one thing they can gravitate towards, they can live for, keeps them going to the next day. You live in hope enough days in a row, sooner or later, it's going to be justified, my friends. And honestly, it's not supposed to be a process we undertake alone. Fact is, we all need supports, no matter what our ability levels. There's not one person on this planet who gets through life entirely alone. There's not one person who can say everything they have is something they made themselves. Faith, love, determination, support. It's quite a recipe. But if you go looking for it enough, you will find the right ingredients towards creating a balanced life. And asking the questions is also key, my friends. Finding out what is in place and what needs to be in place. I mean, if something doesn't exist in the disabilities world, chances are there's somebody out there who can find a way to build it. I mean, if you conduct an audit, if you ask the questions, if you work with people and you ask what the needs really are, what works, what doesn't, it's trial and error. The fact is, you can't just assume something's not going to work or something is going to work without including those that it could benefit in that recipe. We all are stronger as a united community. Fact is, the disability community is not separate from the able-bodied. It's merely part of the same tapestry. We are all part of this great equation, looking to reach our best. And the more we pool our resources and our ideas, the more opportunities we can create. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Ham Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. We'll see you next week.